We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning, I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director is Jason Croft, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. Today we open the phone lines for questions about computers. This is a topic we take up once a month on the first Thursday of the month. Whether you're looking for a new computer, have questions about online security, or need some troubleshooting advice, Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick are ready to help. Debbie is a network engineer for CITES. That's the acronym for Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services at the University of Illinois. Jim is a security engineer for NCSA, the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the U of I. Listeners, join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Good morning. Good to see you.
Morning.
Nice to see you.
September 1st. How about that?
Already.
Yeah. So anything you would like to begin with this morning as we wait for listeners to join us on the phone or by email? No?
Well, we've had so many weeks that we've been in and the phones were so full, I didn't think we talked about anything ahead of time.
We do have a caller coming in.
Okay.
Okay. So let's go and take this call. This is a listener waiting for us in Indiana, line 4. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
I hope this makes some sense in what you're actually there for. Recently, and I guess going on now, Focus's antenna situation is being worked on. So I don't receive 580, so I know I can get it streaming. So I went out and bought me an iPad, got me a router, set everything up, ready to go.
Now
turn
that's a fan.
Huh?
I said, you're a fan. So go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
I
interrupted.
Hell yes, yeah. Oh, of course. I'm sitting back, you know, feeling very good. There's something, and all of a sudden, the main idea of this man was going to present, it went away. And I looked down at that iPad, and it said it was buffering. So I'd like to know what's going on. I have a friend of mine who's into computers somewhat, and he says, well, you idiot, is there too many people on the line somewhere? It could be, you know, Verizon or whoever, but that's what's going on. You just have to wait it out. And so I've been waiting it out. Sometimes it's quite a long wait. Other times it's quick. But oftentimes it's right at the moment where the lightning strikes used to zap out somebody's main idea. Now it's something to do with the computer situation. I wonder if you'd explain it to me so I don't get too angry when I go talk to them on the phone.
Well, when a real-time streaming application, like the one you're using to listen to the stream from Will, says buffering, that means it's not getting enough internet traffic from the source to present you with the full stream, so it pauses while it tries to catch up. The bottleneck could be multiple places. There could be an interruption between your device that you're using to stream and your router, so if it's wireless, you could be getting interference on that particular channel and you have a bad signal. The other probably more likely is that your internet connection to your house is not keeping up for some reason, either because all of your dearest neighbors are downloading lots of stuff and using up the bandwidth that's being shared in your neighborhood. It depends on what technology you use to connect to the internet from your house. If you're using a wireless link to your internet service provider, I would definitely expect delays in streaming. One of the things you can do is to go into the preferences or the options for the streaming program and see if you can increase its buffer time.
Mm-hmm.
That will make the show, when you're listening to it, the stream will not be as live. So there's always going to be some delay, but you could say, well, whatever the max is, let's say it's 30 seconds. So then it'll at least be 30 seconds not live.
Yeah.
But that way, if your internet hiccups for a second, you have 30 seconds of buffer to catch up back to the full stream before it'll interrupt what you're listening to.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing I've seen at home, kind of the same thing. My kids will be watching something on Netflix, and I'm not thinking about it, and I launch my email program, and it starts downloading something with a large attachment. Suddenly, their Netflix goes out. So the other thing would be to check whatever else you've got running in your house over your internet. My DSL connection's not fast enough to stream. Now, that's video, not audio, but it's not fast enough to stream both that and do something else. And we certainly can't watch two Netflix streams at once. It just doesn't work.
Okay, part of the field, I guess. And, oh, well.
Yeah, you know what? We had this problem at home not too long ago, and we called the provider, and eventually we complained a couple of times because it was so slow. It was terrible. Actually, then they did a test from a remote test, and they said, you're right, we have a problem, we'll fix it.
That is worth checking out, especially for an audio stream. You really ought to have pretty good quality at home most of the time. So if you're doing audio and you've double-checked, you don't have another wireless signal interfering with yours, you know, your access point's on the same channel as your neighbor's, those kind of things, sure, call the provider and ask. They can check.
Yeah. Well, I hope that helps. This is Focus. We're talking today about computers. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. No one waiting for us at the moment. I found this, I think it was just yesterday, and I thought, I have to share this with you guys in the audience. This is from the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University. The New York Times is working on devices so that it can sell you the newspaper and other services, perhaps good for them. So anyway, they want to serve you information as you're brushing your teeth. They're working on a mirror that will provide you, let's say, with headlines, with Times videos, with I don't know what else, but it's a data-bearing mirror. Now, if I had read this on March 31st, I would have said, yeah, right. But, you know,
maybe they should just sell you a bracket to hang your tablet, whether you've got an iPad or an Android or an HP. You know, just hang it, you know, on the mirror.
Yeah, so mirror on the wall. So it says here you can use it to browse Times headlines or watch Times videos. You can use it to schedule events on your personal calendar or to shop online or to exchange messages from the classic buy milk on up with other members of your household. No word on when that might be available, but could it be that we'll have a smart device in every room, or we might have?
Oh, probably eventually. It's just when's eventually.
Do we want this?
I don't think I need that in the bathroom.
I don't think
so. I would
so
much rather have it on the front of my refrigerator to start with.
Yeah.
Which I know there are some already out there for that.
Really?
Not the one I have, but there are certain. I have seen that there are. I believe that a lot of them run Android on a little touchscreen on the front of your refrigerator.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that because I would like to say, oh, hey, we need to get milk as a reminder. Now, I'd also like to have a system that maybe I can just scan barcodes, and when I empty the last, you know, it says, hey, it's time for more milk or get some bread, that would be all right.
Yeah, apparently, is that available now, like the smart fridge where you scan your barcode and you put it in there and it tells you what's going to go, you know, what's going to go bad in there, what you need to restock?
I've seen projects for people doing that, but I have not seen any commercial stuff, so I'm not sure.
Yeah. I don't know. What about you, Debbie? You want that kind of mirror in the bathroom?
Oh, I don't know. I just bring my iPad along if I'm in the middle of a book or something and don't want to stop reading it because it's time to brush my teeth.
Yeah. So, is there a device to hang the iPad on the wall? That's a good idea.
I'm sure there is. There's plenty of ways to hang iPads on the wall.
Yeah,
I definitely, in the bathroom, you know, you want to start being careful because so many tablets have cameras and all this other stuff. You know, not in the bathroom.
Not a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
Let's
ask for listeners to join us this morning. Our guests this morning are Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick. They are with the University of Illinois, and they're here this morning to take your telephone calls and answer your email messages about computers. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Maybe we could talk a little bit about apps. I learned that there's some apps out there that are useful in terms of keeping abreast of weather. That the National Weather Service, for example, has an app for smartphones. You can get email or text message alerts when severe weather threatens. And there are some commercial sites that do the same kind of thing. I was wondering, for the two of you, what do you find the most useful apps? What apps do you have that you turn to over and over again?
I definitely have I think I use the Weather Channel app.
That's the one I've got.
Yeah.
To just check the weather. When I get to the car, pull in the parking lot, can I put my windows down or is it going to rain? I pull that out and do a quick check. What's the forecast?
And then I have one that's a little more detailed and quicker as far as presenting weather maps goes. It's just called Rainy Days, and I'm really happy with that one. All it is a big map with some sort of precipitation color-coded on it, and it's quicker than using the Weather Channel app, in my opinion. I'm pretty happy with that one.
Okay. And I use one that's called IntelliCast, and it gives me the radar. That's really nice. So you can plot out your locations, put your locations in, and it'll take you there. So that's pretty useful, too. Well, now we've got some callers. So let's go to the phones. And first, we're going to take a call from a listener in Champaign. Line 1, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
My issue is I'm not very computer literate at all, so if I say something wrong, I'm sure I will. Essentially, what I did recently was I bought a McAfee security system, and I guess a Norton security system was already on there, and I used Comcast, so they may have a security system. And after I downloaded or bought some of this stuff, all I have now is just delay. Sometimes the computer doesn't even shut off very well, and I'm just assuming that maybe there's too much security purchased on my computer.
Well, you certainly, right. You do not want to run more than one product does the same thing when it comes to security. So you only should be running or have actively running at least only, one antivirus program, if there's an anti-malware, spyware program. A lot of that's combined into one product today. It sounds like you need to spend some time, if this is a Windows machine, under add remove programs or the programs portion of the control panel. And since you most recently paid for McAfee, then my suggestion is you go in there and find anything that has to do with the Norton security stuff that was installed previously and remove all of that.
Okay.
And then while you're in there, you can also look to see if there's anything that says any other kind of security stuff that's antivirus or anything that's besides the McAfee stuff. Because you probably want to get rid of that also. And then there's some resources on the internet. Use your favorite search engine to look at possibly, you could just say like speeding up McAfee or something like that, because by default, there's going to be a lot of things on there that may, if you don't have a super fast machine, may slow it down. It's going to slow down any security stuff basically is going to slow down a machine because it's adding extra checks that it's doing. And there are some of those checks that you can tune. You can reduce how deep they're scanning and things like that, and that will give you some performance back. It's all a balancing act of how much performance do I want to lose compared to the security I'm gaining by turning that feature on.
Okay.
And so I'm sure that there's some places on the some folks on the internet and forums or whatever that are going to say, okay, McAfee comes with these things turned on, but in my opinion, unless you're doing A, you really don't need this checker for A turned on, and this will give you some performance back. But the first thing you definitely want to do is make sure that you only have the McAfee security suite installed, no Symantec Norton stuff or from any other parties.
Okay. Does Comcast and their system offer any, protection, firewall protection or whatever?
I'm not sure. I know that ISPs have frequently done that in the past. to be honest, whenever I sign up with a new ISP, if at all possible, I don't even use the CD that they provide. Okay. I just set it up by hand myself. So, and if they do say, hey, we offer this, I always say no because I want to pick my own stuff. I don't want the one from the ISP in general.
Okay.
I'm not saying that's best practice for everybody. That's just how I do it.
All right. Well, very good. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Next, we take a call from a listener who's on his or her way to the Farm Progress Show, line two. Hi.
Hello. How are you this morning?
Fine. How are you?
Slow. but I have a quick question for you. I'm hoping you can help me out with. I recently upgraded a couple of our PCs to the, well, they're brand new PCs running 64-bit Windows 7. And also upgraded the wireless router to a high-speed two-channel, I believe, N-series router. And haven't had it set up for 2 weeks. I did not choose to use the encryption software initially. I was just going to set my own password due to my wife's work and the additional security they have. But in that short period of time, somebody has already compromised our router and basically created a router with the same name with the number 2 after it. So there's a number of PlayStations running on my system, as well as people talking on Skype. And my hard drive was just, I mean, it's literally 3 weeks old, and my hard drive was about two-thirds full of Skype addresses. So how hard is it to go in and just reset the password on the wireless router?
Okay, so first we're talking about two different things on the router. The first, there's an administrative password that lets you configure the router. That needs to be set for everybody out there. Your router should not have the same password that it came from the factory with. Even just randomly pick something if you have to, write on a notepad, a sticky note, and tape it to the top or bottom of the router, because nobody's going to break into your house to look for that password. You need to be able to know it, and if you have a problem where you think you might forget it because you'll only have to set it once and you may never have to go into your router for 2 years, then by all means, just write it on a note and tape it to the router. The next thing we need to do is secure your wireless. You don't want to be running a wireless that anybody can just attach to. It gets on your own home network, and then they can surf the internet. That's what I expect one of the problems you had was. You need to be running the encryption is WPA2 PSK. That stands for pre-shared key. It's also known as WPA2 home. And if it further asks, the encryption algorithm system used should be AES, not TKIP, not TKIP. You want it to be AES. Those are not very difficult. In fact, a lot of quick start instructions from that came with the router will actually have. And one of the first things you should do is set the encryption up on the wireless. So now,
I usually do. I always have, and I just put in a password. We have company quite frequently, and my wife has fellow office workers come over to work together, so I have an easily rememberable password that I always had on my previous routers. And I just didn't get a chance to set it up before I got whacked.
Sure. And since you think that they've made changes to the router, you may want to go find the instructions and reset it to factory defaults and just start everything back from scratch. And then the first thing you do is set the password or set the wireless encryption scheme so nobody can use your wireless.
And can I still create my own password, or do I need to use the encryption key that you spoke of?
So the encryption key, I mean, so like I said, you have the password to get into the router, and then I think we're talking about the same thing about as far as like using the wireless from connecting to the wireless from a laptop, is that's the encryption key. If you want to call it the password, that's fine. It needs to be probably at least 8 characters.
Okay.
Any shorter than that, and there are some issues with people being able to do brute force attacks against it, possible. for instance, mine's like 30 some characters, and the way you transfer, so you're like, oh, I don't want to type that or remember that. No, so for me, I just put that in a text file on a USB key. And anybody that I want to be able to use my wireless, I just hand them the USB key. They open up the text file. And then when they join the wireless, it says, okay, what's the wireless key? They just copy and paste it from that text file.
Great idea. Great idea. No, that's outstanding. I appreciate that. That's a great way to do it, Ben.
Now, that doesn't address the part, though, where your hard drive's full. It sounds like somebody also hacked your computer before you got something set up.
I already got that emptied out. I worked with Skype, and they were very helpful, actually, to get that stuff out of my hard drive. And since I've turned off the wireless on the laptop, since I've cleaned it out.
I suspect that part of that was perhaps Windows 7's default sharing on a home network settings. So since they were on the inside of the LAN, they were able to use his desktops or laptops as file storage. That's where I would start with on that. That not necessarily were the laptops compromised. They were just their settings were allowing home use or anybody on the local subnet to share data.
Yeah, my security breach was at the printer, believe it or not.
Interesting.
The wireless on the printer was wide open.
Oh, wireless, right. I strongly suggest I'm not a big fan of printers connected wirelessly because you don't carry them around very often. And anything that has to be plugged into the wall, I like having just a wired connection on it. So first thing I do when I get one of those is disable the wireless on the printer and then run a cable to it.
But you know what? My new printer didn't have an Ethernet jack. I was very disappointed because I had an Ethernet cable already run replacing the old printer, and it was wireless or USB. And USB means the computer's got to be on.
Yeah, I had to buy a card for it to get a hardwire in it.
That's disappointing to me that manufacturers are doing that. So.
Well, thank you very much. I really do appreciate it. I'll have to attack that tonight. I was shocked that I've never had a problem. I've always kept things secure. And within less than 2 weeks, we got hit real hard. So. Mm.
Apparently, your neighbors enjoyed your free internet for a while.
Sure did, and the kids are having a ball. I kept getting invites to join in. I'm like, where is this coming from? I sadly, I don't have an Xbox, so good play.
Well, good luck to you, and have a good time at the show today, although it's going to be a hot one out there.
Yeah, it's showing 94 outside right now from my car in center. So
okay.
I think it's going to be a little heated.
Well, take care.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Next, we're going to take a call from a listener in Urbana on line 3. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
I recently bought an iMac operating on Lion system 10.7. And I'm having all kinds of problems making it operate like my older versions of Macs would. I had to download a new driver for the printer from HP, and that it didn't even work, although it was specified for 10.7. And this won't... The 10.7 won't use a dial-up connection for internet like I've been using, and Juno doesn't even know that. Well, one of their technicians did, but the rest of them seem to be ignorant of that. Is there any way I can go back to a previous operating system on this version of iMac?
Wow, that's a hard question. It really depends on the hardware. I don't think they've released a brand new update to the iMac hardware. Jim, do you remember?
I really don't know.
Yeah, if they didn't release a brand new hardware version at the same time they released Lion, which I don't think they did, then yes, you can probably go back. But to do that, you would need OS 10.6 install disks. And what you probably had with your previous computer was the disks that came with it, and they may or not work with the iMac. You'd need a...
Yeah, I do have a 10.4 install disk, and the 10.4 then was upgraded to finally Snow Leopard 10.8 or 10.68, and I tried putting that disk into the new machine and try to operate off the disk by holding the C key down as it boot up, but it refused to operate off that disk.
No, that's not going to work because your hardware was made in the last year and 10.4 is very, very old. If you had an actual 10.6 boot disk, you might be able to reinstall 10.6. If you can get a hold of one of those, that might solve your problem, but be warned, if it came with 10.7 installed on it, you're going to have to reformat the hard drive. So you're going to want to back up anything you've put on it before you do that.
I think you can also, instead of going back, are you using the Apple USB modem, and that's what stopped working in Lion?
That's right. I have an Apple USB modem.
They did not put drivers in Lion for that. U.S. Robotics and perhaps other hardware manufacturers have Lion capable USB modems available. So perhaps the fix is actually just to replace your Apple USB modem with a third-party modem.
Okay. I see what you mean. All right. Well, that's a good suggestion. Thank you.
The HP drivers you downloaded, keep trying on that. Go back to HP's website. I've had pretty good luck with my HP printers and Lion so far. So it may just be that they need to release yet another updated version for that.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our guests today talking with us about computers, Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick. Debbie is a network engineer for CITES. That's the acronym for Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services at the University of Illinois. Jim is a security engineer for NCSA, the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the university. Listeners, I invite you to join us this morning with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL, and the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. More after a short break.
On the next Fresh Air, as All You Can Eat Week continues, we listen back to our 1989 interview with the late Julia Child, the original TV chef who popularized French food in the U.S. Also, some kitchen advice from Harold McGee, an expert on the science of food and cooking. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309.
This is Focus. On the program tomorrow, ahead of Labor Day, David Inge will talk about the changed and changing nature of employment and work in the 21st century. That's tomorrow in the 10 o'clock hour of the program. In the 11 o'clock hour tomorrow, I'll be in the host seat, and I'll welcome back to the program our dog trainers, Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm. This morning, we're talking about computers with Jim Eyrick and Debbie Flieger, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Those are the phone numbers, the email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take a call now from a listener in Aurora. Line 4, hi.
Hi. So I was wondering if there's any programs from Microsoft Word that are free off the Internet?
You mean to work with Microsoft Word documents?
Well, I was to download on my computer to use.
Right, but you're asking, you want to replace the document, you don't have Word and you want to be able to have something that works like Word, is that?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
Thanks, I guess I misspoke.
I think the most popular one is the Open Office project.
Yeah, that one's pretty good.
And that is free. That'd be my first choice. If I was unable to have the Microsoft Office package, I would get the Open Office package.
Okay, and you just do a search for Open Office, and that would come up then, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Next, we take a listener in Peoria waiting for us on line two. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi. I wanted to ask a question about an HP printer that constantly tells me that my ink supply is low, and it's actually not. So I'm trying to figure out how to disable that function.
I'm not sure. It's saying low in the printer or low on like your a little pop up in the corner of your screen?
Well, it pops up on the whole screen actually.
Okay. A lot of printers you can not. I mean, there might be an option where you can say, "Don't tell me about low ink." I'm not going to know the specifics of that. You're going to have to search for that on the internet.
Okay.
A lot of printers you can actually run them and print to them without having all that extra software installed that does, like, it's called like the printer monitor.
Okay.
The one that came with there's printer stuff built into your operating system, but the stuff that you installed extra when you installed the printer, some of that stuff you don't need and you can just print to it through the built-in Windows things or Mac, whichever one you have. So you could just try uninstalling the printer monitors and that should stop bugging you.
Okay.
I think the root of the issue is we need to find out why it thinks the ink is low when it's not. That you might want to have to go to HP's, or you might want to go to HP's technical support website and say, why does it keep doing this, and see if you can find them. It says, well, here was the issue.
Okay. You know,
one of the things I noticed with my new printer is it had a few issues when I bought it, and it had an option to do firmware upload. I let it upgrade the firmware, and suddenly the three or four little minor problems that were kind of annoying all went away. So that would be the other thing to check for, is if that's an incorrect report, but the printer's working right, you might be able to upgrade the firmware and have it go away as well.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Let's take another call now. This is a listener on line one in Urbana. Good morning. Line one, go ahead.
I'm sorry, did you say Urbana?
Yes.
Okay, let me get out.
Okay.
What I wanted to know is, I searched around, I haven't found it, but maybe I just missed it. Is there anything like Publisher that you can get for a Mac?
Publisher?
Microsoft Publisher.
It's wonderful, but I can't do things at home.
Not off the top of my head, partly because I don't actually know what Microsoft Publisher does. So.
Well, it's a publishing program. It does... it's for layout for newsletters and brochures and things like that.
The closest thing I know of for that is Apple's Pages. They sell it a little bit more like a Word replacement, but when you actually open it up, it's all about layouts and newsletters and things like that.
Okay.
And I think they sell it for not a whole lot of money on their App Store. You used to have to buy it in combination with their whole iWork suite. But I believe that you can purchase it for much less money. I'm trying to check real here, as in the tune of $20, so that you could not spend a whole lot and find out what it did for you.
Well, that's great.
And Adobe also offers a bunch of different creative design products, and I haven't had time to look through and find out if they're all also available on Macs. And so you might want to investigate them. So the Adobe Creative Suites.
Okay, Apple Pages, Adobe Creative Suite. Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, I was driving and I didn't think I'd get in this fast. All of a sudden you were saying, oh. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And we're going to take an email question next. After my last Mac update to 10.5.8 OS X, my Canon MP620 wireless printer no longer connects, and several other applications such as GoToMeeting for webcasts and some online games no longer will run. I corrected the GoToMeeting problem by using Firefox, but I had to load the latest upgrade. What's causing this? How do I fix it?
Well, 10.5.8 is a pretty old update. I've kind of paged my information about that out of my brain. I know, unfortunately, my experience with Canon devices is they don't do a really nice job of updating their drivers for new versions of the operating system. So while I wouldn't have, depending on where you were going from to, if you were going from 10.5.7 to 10.5.8, I would not have expected that problem. But if you've got a PowerPC Mac and you were just getting around to going from, say, 10.4 to 10.5, then I wouldn't be surprised at all. And so that part of it definitely depends on where you started versus where you're ending up. My luck with that's pretty poor. The GoToMeeting, I'm surprised you had to switch to Firefox as opposed to the current version of Safari, but if it works, it works. At this point, with 10.5.8, I'd say you want to do some Google searches, you know, the specific things you're having, see if you can find answers, you know, for each individual thing. It's probably not if most things are still working, it's probably not an overall problem with your upgrade. It's probably just a change in some of those applications. There might be patches or newer versions for the individual problem apps.
Okay. This is Focus, and this morning we're talking about computers. No one waiting at the moment, either on email or on the phone. So if you've got a question, good time to call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 800-222-9455, the toll-free number. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Somebody asked me that if we had a lull in the show when we were waiting for people to join us, that maybe you would review clearing out cookies.
Oh, wow. Cookies. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, let's see.
Off the top of my head, I actually don't know the process, but we can certainly walk
and
through it.
Why do people want to do that, or why is that something that...
Well, so there are some cookies that track you and see and see what you're doing that you may not want. In general, cookies, for instance, I don't recall the last time I cleared out my cookies. So it's not a big concern of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I do it for troubleshooting. If I'm having a problem with the website that's just being goofy, I might try to find the cookies associated with that site and delete them. That doesn't happen very often. Like I said, there's the ad tracking cookies that people consider not necessarily, perhaps not bad, but certainly not beneficial to you. In general, I like cookies because I like the fact that Amazon remembers when I go back to their website that I'm the one logged in and here's what my shopping cart looks like and things like that.
And we have some things to recommend for you. And
right, yeah. Exactly.
No, for Safari, it's at least pretty easy. I mean, I don't empty it very often. I used to be a little more picky about it. But if you go to the preferences, there's a whole bunch of choices across the top, and one of them is privacy. And right there at the top, it says cookies and other website data, and with a big button, remove all website data. And then it says there's 333 websites with stored cookies and other data, and I can get details, and I can go in and I can remove any individual one. So I could leave, you know, if I knew somebody had done something bad or I really didn't like the site, I could take those out by hand and still leave Amazon. I have right under there, there's a choice to block cookies, and there's three choices. There's never, always, and from third parties and advertisers. Now, there's a lot of things that need cookies, but I have that set to from third parties and advertisers. So when I go to Amazon, Amazon's cookie's fine because I went to Amazon and it's their cookie, but it does knock out some of the ads and other things that are annoying, even though it doesn't get all of them.
And in Firefox, it's under options and privacy, and there's show cookies. And you can go through and search for them, and there's actually, you can remove the ones you've selected, or you can hit the button that says remove all cookies. And they also have similar options. Accept cookies from sites, from third parties, keep them until they expire. I believe that you can also set it so it deletes. When you quit Firefox, it will go through and you can have it clear out browsing history, download history, cookies, caches, things like that. So also under the privacy tab.
Okay, let's go back and to the phones and take a call from a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Good morning. I have a quick window here, and I thought I would just double check with you people because I don't consider myself amazingly skilled on this. At one point several years ago, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law needed to use Quest, a messenger system, and because they were visiting, you know, we installed it on there and we're good to go. Well, they no longer use that, and it pops up every morning and seems to really slow my boot up. So I thought, I would go and see if I could figure out how to do that. eHow.com offers a method to do that. Do you think that's pretty trustworthy? Just go ahead and follow the directions on it?
Well, in general, I would just start with, is this a Windows machine?
It is a Windows machine.
So for me, I just start with going to the control panel and going to, it used to be called Add Remove Programs. I believe it's now just called Programs and Features.
Okay, and mine is still the Add and Remove.
Okay, so then you just go to Add Remove Programs, wait for it to populate the list, find the Quest Messenger application, click on it, and say Remove.
Okay, great. And then just I need to follow whatever it says and then just restart the computer afterward?
In general, yeah, it'll prompt you through, hey, do you want me to delete all the user information or not?
Okay.
It may say at the end of it, hey, I require a computer reboot for this to be done, and you say yes now or later.
Okay.
So in general, that's the first way you should, on a Windows machine, that you should uninstall.
Now, when you say a first way, that implies that might not work?
Agreed. So there are certainly programs that they're like ticks trying to dig them out.
Uh-huh.
Usually it's security programs and ad-supported games and things like that, when I've run into that. So my first method is always to try to use uninstall program, and uninstall program can actually fail, and it'll tell you, sorry, I couldn't do this.
Okay.
In that case, I fail over to my favorite search engine, and I say, you know, Windows XP or Windows 7, and I name the program, and I say, how to remove.
Okay.
And then I may end up on a place called eHow where somebody says, this is how I got, how I was able to get rid of it.
Okay.
And eHow says to use add and remove programs.
All right.
So.
Say that again?
eHow says using add and remove programs should remove Quest Messenger.
Oh, that's outstanding to know. Yeah, I just don't want one of those Groundhog Days where you uninstall everything and the next morning there it is again. And I mean, I don't know enough. I can't go deep enough to solve that on my own.
Okay. Well,
so we're good?
I think you're good.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's take another call. Also, a listener in Champaign, line 2. Hi.
Hi. There was a lady who wanted to know about Publisher for Mac. The most recent version of Office with Word, basically the Mac version of Word 2010 or 2011, is basically Publisher. Well, it has Publisher functionality, so just wanted to let her know that. If you type it up in the Internet, if you Google it, you'll find that that's true. But I don't know why they did it, why they don't call it Publisher, but it's in Word now for Mac, Word for Mac.
Okay. Nice to know. Thanks for the tip. This is Focus, and we have about 9 minutes left in this portion of the program. If you've got a question about computers, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Debbie, I have a MacBook that is maybe 3-4 years old now, and I'm wondering when will I need to get the battery replaced?
Well, that's a pretty easy, because your battery should last you whatever it lasted you when you bought the computer. So when you first bought the computer, you could use it for 3 hours, and now you can only use it for half an hour. You replace it, and that's, to a large degree, that's a personal question. How often do you need to go that full length of your notebook? If you routinely go, all 5 hours, when it starts getting down to 4 hours, that's a problem. Then you replace the battery. Other than that, the other thing you can do is in your About This Mac, there's a button called More Info. And if you go into that, it brings up your system profiler, and you can look at the power option under hardware. And for example, mine says, for my battery, it's information. It's got charge information. What's the charge remaining? What's the full charge capacity? And those are in milliamp hours. And if that number is a lot lower than it was when you first got your computer, and you should be able to look up what it was, what it should be. For the example, mine has a full charge capacity of 6,275, and it's been used for 59 cycles. And so, if it says my full charge capacity was only 3,000, then I'd know that my battery, what I can get it up to and expect it to last is much, much shorter than it used to be. And it'll kind of tell you. For the Macs, especially if it's gotten very bad, you go into there, it'll actually tell you replace battery now.
Oh, okay.
But if your cycle count's under 100, your full charge capacity should be within about 1,000 of where it started. So if mine's had, I have no idea. I have to look if this should have been about 7,000 or 6,500, you know, when it was made, then it's very reasonable. But if it had been, you know, supposed to be 7,000 and it was down to 3,000 and it was under 100 or 150 cycles, then there's something really wrong and you should get it replaced.
Okay. Thanks for that. And now we're going to take a call from a listener in Urbana. Line one, hi.
Hi. How are you this morning?
Fine. How are you?
I'm Michelle. Well, I'm very frustrated. I'm one of these retired university employees who just had my email switched from the sites to the Microsoft Outlook. And I've called sites and talked to them about different things, but I think I need to hire somebody to get all my email addresses and my folders and all that stuff over there. I go in my contacts, and it's got people over in Newmark Hall or something, and there's no delete mark and that sort of stuff. So how do I hire somebody or take a class on basic switching over? Has anybody else called in about this?
The issue about seeing contacts that are not necessarily your contacts, I think that's what happens when you're looking actually through the global address book. That's an address book of everybody that's in the system. You should be able to tell it to not look through the global address book when you're searching for stuff, or it may only fail into that when it can't find it in your personal address book. As far as transferring address book entries and mail and folders between Express Mail and the new Exchange service, I thought that they had some instructions and perhaps even a tool to assist with that. Neither Debbie or I are actually part of the group that's doing that. But certainly you can also go in to the Sipes help desk or make an appointment with them and go in, and they will assist you with this.
Right. I've done that, and some of the things they were having trouble with, so they sent me emails to find it. But I think I just need a person to, like a fifth grader.
You know, the Independent Media Center has a clinic from time to time.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and so I would give them a call and find out about that, or maybe somebody's listening can call in really quick with that information.
Okay.
That could be of help too.
Right. I thought there's a lot of us out there that may be in the same situation.
I think there are.
Need some counseling going through it. So, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, you're very welcome.
I got one other option for her if she's still listening. Besides, the media center is a great one, but the on-site consultants will work for retirees. And that's more of a pay-for option, but they'll come out to your house and help you do things. So if it's a little more personal than going into the help desk and scheduling an appointment.
Yeah, and that is through sites?
Yeah, that's the sites on-site consulting. They would work through the help desk, I believe, to schedule that.
Okay. And a caller called in to say that if you go to sites, they'll help you with that. But I think the caller already did that. So it's time for another tactic there. We could probably get one more call in this morning, maybe two. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. And we've got another email message. With my mail stored by MS Outlook Web Access, I don't have copies of my messages or folders stored in my own computer. How can I easily retrieve all my files to disk/CD? I'll be changing accounts and would otherwise lose everything. Which email companies allow access by programs like Eudora, Hotmail, Yahoo?
I certainly know that Yahoo and Google allow at least IMAP. I know Google allows POP access, which would be from something like Eudora or I personally use Thunderbird or other offline mail readers, the one that comes with Macs or with Windows. So that's probably the way to transfer is to enable the IMAP or POP feature for that account, install the application on your local machine, and then pull all your data from the web-hosted email account to your local computer.
That's pretty much. And as a longtime Eudora user, I have to say, you know, it's pretty much time to pick something else, I'm afraid. The support, you know, it went open source, and you know, you really want to start looking for something else, especially if you're a Mac user. It's showing its age, unfortunately.
Okay, and so you probably want to. How would you go about making that choice, Debbie?
Well, it's a lot of personal preference, and it depends on which computer you're on. Thunderbird works on just about everything, and then if you're on a Mac, there's Apple Mail as an option. If you're on Windows, there's whatever variation of Outlook is either, you know, there's usually some version that's free with the computer, a lightweight version, and then if you've got the whole Office suite, you've got the full-blown version. Almost all those programs work pretty well. Or I know a lot of people have switched over to just reading it on the web. If they go to with Gmail or Yahoo or someplace like that, instead of storing it locally, they read it on the web. But then, you know, if you're worried about making sure you've got a local copy, that's probably not the choice you want.
And for me, if you're a Eudora user now, at least when I made this the switch over, Thunderbird was the one that acted the closest to the way Eudora worked for me, as opposed to the built-in one in Apple or the one in Windows. At the time, I was on a Windows machine, so I didn't really have the experience with the Apple one. But so that's my suggestion, is if you're a Eudora user, you should give Thunderbird a try.
Okay. Well, we've got about 1 minute left, so back to the battery question. How can we make our batteries last longer, hold their charge, and the battery life?
Don't leave your laptop plugged in all the time.
Really?
Right. So leaving it in at 100% charge and hot will actually reduce the lifetime of battery. So you let it charge up, unplug it, run it for a while, plug it back in, and go and do cycles like that. But sitting on your desk, if you have a laptop and often are just working at a desk, do not leave it plugged into the outlet the entire day. That will cause the lifetime of the battery to go down significantly.
I did not know that.
Heat is the other big thing, and that's a lot what it is. Even though most computers are smart enough to go from the high-speed charge to the slower-speed charge to get that last little bit in, it never stops sending it juice. The circuit doesn't ever cut the battery out.
Okay.
So even though you could run the computer on the outlet and not send anything to the battery, it doesn't. So the battery is constantly getting poked just a little bit when it's overfull, and that overheats it.
And in general, don't let them run all the way dry either. I think the most recent thing I've read said, you know, let it go down to, I don't know what, some percentage, and then, you know, let it off the battery for a few hours or for an hour or two, put it back on the charger, run, and then when it's full, pull it off and go back and forth like that.
Okay. Well, I guess I've got to change a habit.
It's hard to do because, you know, I want it to be on at night or whatever. If I'm home and I want it to be slurping down email, I got to leave it plugged in because it'll die if I don't. But.
Okay. Well, there we'll leave it. We'll talk about computers again next month in October on the first Thursday of the month. Jim, Debbie, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana.
Lifetime of the battery to go down significantly.
I did not know that.
Heat is the other big thing, and that's a lot what it is. Even though most computers are smart enough to go from the high-speed charge to the slower-speed charge to get that last little bit in, it never stops sending it juice. The circuit doesn't ever cut the battery out.
Okay.
So even though you could run the computer on the outlet and not send anything to the battery, it doesn't. So the battery is constantly getting poked just a little bit when it's overfull, and that overheats it.
And in general, don't let them run all the way dry either. I think the most recent thing I've read said, you know, let it go down to, I don't know what, some percentage, and then, you know, let it off the battery for a few hours or for an hour or two, put it back on the charger, run, and then when it's full, pull it off and go back and forth like that.
Okay. Well, I guess I've got to change a habit.
It's hard to do because, you know, I want it to be on at night or whatever. If I'm home and I want it to be slurping down email, I got to leave it plugged in because it'll die if I don't. But.
Okay. Well, there we'll leave it. We'll talk about computers again next month in October on the first Thursday of the month. Jim, Debbie, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana.
Today's programs are made possible by Champagne Cycle, 506 South Country Fair Drive in Champaign. With gas prices going higher, more people are looking at the bicycle as serious transportation to work or the store. Trek Ride Plus bicycles offer an electric boost to the rider's natural pedaling, allowing them to go farther with less effort.
1 minute before noon Central Time, let's take a look at commodity prices. In Kansas City, September wheat, 868 and a quarter, down 2 3/4. December, 890 and a quarter, down 4 3/4. September wheat, Chicago, 730, down 15 and a quarter. December, 776 and a half, down 15. September corn, 750 and a quarter, down 7 1/4. The December contract, 759 and 3/4, down 7 3/4. March, 771, make that 772, down 7. May, 776 and a half, down 7 1/4. September soybeans, 1443 and 3/4, down 5 1/4. November, 1451, down 6 1/2. January, 1460 and 3/4, down 6 1/2. The March contract, 1464 and a half, down 4 1/4.